Happy Monday night. It's the Fan pregame up on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590, the Fan for the next hour, Ailish. And Justin, getting your week set here. We got a couple guests for you. Michelle Beadle of Run It Back on FanDuel TV. Of course, Mad Dog Sports Radio is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll pregame tomorrow's Emirates Cup championship game between the Bucks and OKC. She can help us do that in about 10 minutes. And then Jean Principe. Love Jean. Jean's coming on around 6:30 to preview our first Stanley Cup rematch of the season between the Oilers and the Panthers.
Yeah, it's a big one. A great night in the NHL. Three really, really good matchups, but the Stanley Cup final rematch gets top billing on Prime tonight. Excited to catch up with Jean. It's been a little bit, it's been a while, but yeah, of course we got to get Jean on when the Panthers and Oilers are set to get reacquainted after last summer's exciting Stanley Cup final.
You mentioned a good night in the NHL. We'll have Avs and Canucks a 10:30 start. That's on Sportsnet Pacific as well. It's a great game. And we've got Cap Stars as well. That one's tonight. But we've got Colorado Vancouver. You can watch on Sportsnet Pacific. Got some basketball on the network. Philadelphia and Charlotte. That's on after us here on Sportsnet. And Denver and Sacramento afterwards at 10 p.m. So lots of things for you to pick at tonight. But let's talk about that Stanley Cup rematch, because both these teams obviously made it to the final game, the final day, game seven of the Stanley Cup final. Can't get much closer than that. But right now, if you were to, you know, do a futures bet, which Justin loves, for Florida to beat Edmonton, it's 55-1 odds. And for Edmonton to beat Florida, it's 50-1 odds. So it's not the most probable Stanley Cup rematch or Stanley Cup final. We'll have our text line open here at 590-590. And you guys can weigh in. Standard message and data rates apply. Who's more likely to reach the Stanley Cup final, the Panthers or the Oilers? Obviously, the Panthers defending champs, but take a look at their paths. Take a look at the start of their season. If you had to pick one to be in the final, who would it be, Panthers or Oilers?
That's an interesting question. I'm more amazed by how similar their seasons seem to be. Like, look at their records. Panthers, 18-11-2, second in the Atlantic Division, +9 goal differential. They're a really good team playing at an okay level. The Oilers, 18-10-2. So the only difference is the Oilers have one fewer loss in regulation, but they're third in the Pacific Division, 4 points back, +13 goal differential. They're kind of on the exact same trajectories, and they've taken different paths, at least to this point. The Florida Panthers were great right out of the chute. Had that big win over Boston, two big wins over Boston to start the year. The Oilers had their struggles to start the year, and now they've really, really ramped it up. But I think there's, you mentioned picking at it. I think you got to pick at both these teams to figure out exactly what's going on, because we've seen a pattern with the Oilers before of this slow start and getting it going. And then the Panthers have had so much success that you can't get hung up on the fact that, hey, they're on a two-game losing streak right now, haven't scored a goal in Western Canada, having two losses hung on them. I think if I was to answer the question, I would just look at who they have to beat on their path to get there. And I think it's probably slightly easier for the Florida Panthers in order to do that, because the Oilers have to deal with a true Stanley Cup contender in the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm not
sure.
Who
they just beat.
Yes. But I'm not sure the Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins and maybe got Tampa Bay Lightning are that. So I think I would say the Panthers right now, but these two teams, I think, are positioning themselves really well, despite their records and their run to this point, not necessarily screaming, hey, we're about to go back to this thing.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed, I think, with the start for the Edmonton Oilers, but understandably so. They had definitely a Stanley Cup hangover to start the season. They just came out flat, really starting slow, and they did that last year, but then they had that miraculous run, and like, okay, how much repeatable is this? They fired their coach, and then they went on that incredible run last year. So watching the way they started this year, I think it was understandable. You got all the way back from a 3-0 deficit to lose in Game 7, and it just was uninspiring to start. But you mentioned it. They're on this hot streak right now. They've been winning games. They've been playing like they've found their footing again. And I wonder if there's a little bit of the, you know, a couple guys lost their chance to represent Team Canada at the Four Nations Cup because of this start. A lot of locks that won't be able to do that. And I wonder if that's going to be not the kick in the butt that they need to go on a Stanley Cup run. But it is something that I think is going to bother a few of these guys. That didn't really happen too much with the Panthers. Like, most of the guys that were expected to make it have made it. I just think that the Oilers...
Even unexpected guys have made it.
Definitely unexpected guys have made it. I just think that the Oilers are going to have that chip on their shoulder. They got to Game 7 and they lost. They were almost the team to do the thing that was unbelievable, right? And I just thought they would come out with that fire to start the regular season, but maybe it's something that burns within them. And I know our reporters were talking to the Oilers about tonight's game, and they all have the same song and dance. This doesn't mean anything to us. This game means a lot to the Oilers. It's an opportunity to kind of, it's not a game eight. It's a game one of a different series for these two, but I think you want to put a big stamp on this streak you've been on, that you've turned the corner and beat the team that beat you in game seven.
So I mentioned the mediocre records. They're pretty good records, but not necessarily that of, wow, they're definitely going to the Stanley Cup final. But I'm trying to find something within those records that's going to help me answer this question. I think it's less convincing on the Oilers side, but U.S. Thanksgiving is also always this like landmark, right? Where we say, hey, if you're not here by this point,
we did that.
You're done. But the Oilers don't necessarily abide by those standards. They've been awful the last 2 years.
They like slow starts.
Thanksgiving, they go to the Stanley Cup final. And now, since U.S. Thanksgiving, they're 7-1 with wins over Colorado, Vegas, Tampa, Minnesota, in St. Louis. So this is actually when they just turn the switch. This is when we want to get going. You kind of do away with the first 5 to 6 weeks of the season because you're using that as an extended training camp. And maybe I'm putting a little bit too much into it, but we've seen this from the Oilers before. What happens pre-Thanksgiving, maybe not as important as what happens after Thanksgiving. And I guess that's pretty obvious. But with the Panthers, I found this stat. Their record versus teams that they've played in the playoffs the last two seasons. This year, they are 7-0. So teams that they have some history with, teams that they know and understand have a really high level when they're at that level. And there's some familiarity, but also, hey, we know we can measure ourselves against this team in these moments. So those seven wins include wins over Boston, Toronto, Carolina, Vegas, and the New York Rangers. So with that playoff history, they rise to the occasion. And that brings us to tonight, where they have a Stanley Cup final rematch. Do they go to 8-0? Does this game mean more than the previous two on the West Coast? I would say certainly it does. But I am interested in the fact that the Panthers obviously have played at such a high level and have played so many games, and fatigue has to be part of the equation here. But I think they do get up for these moments, and these are the games that mean most to them, that are most important, that give you the best glimpse of what the Florida Panthers are and still can be. So I think that's an interesting one, and we'll see if that trend continues tonight.
I think you're right, and this has been a theme that we've been talking about for the last couple of days, last week. Is like, there's not a lot of elite teams, and I think the East is much less elite than the West. I don't know. It's just something about the physicality that the Western Conference teams have. Like, there are more teams that I would circle as real competitive playoff potential Stanley Cup advancing teams in the West than I would in the East. So that gives you the edge, maybe, if you're answering our text line question about who's more likely to make it, the Panthers or the Oilers. And our text line is open, and most people are saying Panthers. But, you know, somebody said probably Florida, but last year we saw Edmonton will go as far as McDavid will take them. He proved that what he can do in the finals. This is coming from a Panthers fan. So it seems Panthers heavy, this answer. Maybe it's just the belief of a Canadian team even just making it to the final. Like, remember how everyone got behind the Oilers, or we at least wanted to be Canada's team? It feels improbable at times to have that be the way that we see the Stanley Cup come back. Maybe it is, but look at the Western Conference. The Jets,
yeah,
good team. Wild, they were the number one team in the NHL for a while there. Stars, they're always in the conversation. Avs, now the sneaky team that everyone's betting on to make a comeback. That's the top of the Central. And then you got the Golden Knights, who I know the Oilers just beat. The Kings, I'm not as sold on the Kings. And
just
then,
as hot as any team in the Western Conference.
So. And then there's the Oilers there. Canucks, Flames, of course, some Canadians in there as well. I feel like there's more tougher competition for the Oilers to make it all the way to the end.
Yeah, I think you can make the case that there's seven legitimate Stanley Cup contenders in the Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, you look at the Metropolitan Division, and we already know who's
going to make the playoffs.
The
Capitals are leading the way.
We already know who's going to make the playoffs. There's five actual bad teams in the Metropolitan Division. Certainly Jersey, Washington, and who am I missing?
Carolina.
Jersey, Washington, Carolina will be going to the playoffs in some sort of order, probably the top three in the Metro. And Boston, we know, has taken a step back. I think Tampa's still trying to prove itself as at least maintaining the standard that they've had the last couple years. I do believe Toronto is a very good team, and they're going to be a tough test for Florida. But I think the surroundings basically answer the question for us here. It's a lot tougher in the Western Conference at the top end. And Florida, you know, despite all the success, It's going to be a little bit easier, and even a diminished version might be able to get through.
All right. So we will continue to talk a little more Oilers, Panthers with Gene in about 30 minutes. But before we bring on Michelle, tomorrow, great game. Obviously, we've got OKC and the Bucks. I think it ended up being pretty good, this season two final of the Emirates Cup or the NBA
Cup. Got you on board?
Or, yeah, there's some star power. That's all you really want. Or like the rugged underdog. But I think, you know, OKC and the Bucks, Shea versus Giannis, it's a pretty good setup.
Yeah, at least for me, I think OKC is the perfect NBA Cup entry, the perfect team to win the NBA Cup because they are elite, clearly. They play in a small market, so they don't have all the attention in the world surrounding them. And this gives them a little shine, which I think a young group like them will embrace. Plus, there are guys at the end of the roster who don't make a lot of money and could use the extra bump in pay for going to an event like this. So I think if we're trying to answer the question what the right team is or who we should expect to win NBA Cups, it's a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder.
All right, so let's shift over to a little basketball talk with our first guest of the evening, Michelle Beadle of Run It Back on FanDuel TV, Mad Dog Sports Radio, Beadle Decker, lots of things. Michelle, we appreciate you jumping on. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're great. We're seeing the NBA Cup, or the Emirates Cup, come to a finale tomorrow, the season two of it all. And I think it took me a little while to get on board with it this year, but OKC and the Bucks, I'm talking to Justin about it, you know, Shea versus Giannis. I think we actually ended up with a pretty star-studded cast with some teams that have a little bit of something to prove and some guys on the roster that would also love a little bit of money. So are we happy with the way that the final has shaped up for tomorrow in Vegas?
I am. I think you have, you know, it's weird, too, because you've got Giannis, who's an NBA champ and a team that started the season with NBA champ expectations. Obviously, they've started to right that ship and look a lot better than they started with those two wins for a long time. But, yeah, you have a star-studded vet team, and then you've got this young. It's crazy when you talk about OKC because they are very young, although every time SGA's age is brought up, I have to remind myself of that because he carries himself so maturely and wisely in this league. But they are a team that I think most of us that watch the league expect to be champs at some point. When you throw in the fact that their team is constructed as it is and that they've been hoarding draft picks for years now, so there's no end in sight for how this thing goes, and if they need to add pieces or trade pieces, they're more equipped to do that than really anyone else in the league. So it's awesome. It's like a powerhouse Bucks team against what we all expect the future to look like, and I love it.
How close is the future? We want to talk about the NBA Cup a little more, but you mentioned they're built to win. Just when? How close do you think OKC is? I don't know if the NBA Cup is the perfect barometer for it, but yeah, we've had two big games against two Western Conference opponents who would be considered elite or at least close to, and I felt like everyone was on board versus Dallas, and everyone was on board in that Houston game. And yet they made it look pretty easy, even despite some struggles offensively in the first half versus Houston. Are they the clear class of the Western Conference? And this is all done, again, without Chet Holmgren.
And there's that. It's crazy to say that out loud because we are talking about the Western Conference. But, you know, Denver doesn't look like the Denver that we're all used to seeing. You know, Golden State, I know, has probably surprised people that they've been even as good as they have been. But I don't think any of us are really thinking that they're headed back to anything anytime soon. It's, you know, Dallas for me last year was almost a lightning in a bottle situation, so I'm not even sure I look to them as getting back to that point. So it's kind of crazy. Like, I just don't see who else in the West is going to figure out what's going on here. So I'm going to go OKC personally because it just feels weird to say out loud. Lakers, no. Clippers, no. They're never going to be healthy. Minnesota, no. They got worse. Yeah, it's weird to say out loud, and my logical side is like, you sound like a crazy person. But until somebody else pops up that seems like they know what they're doing, OKC's got all the leverage. And by the way, Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, watching him sort of thrive, usually when you go after a big paycheck like that, sometimes the team that you play for suffers. The fact that not only he got paid better than anybody else was going to be willing to pay him, but he finds himself in an even better situation than he was in New York. It's really like a good story, fairy tale ending.
Let's focus in on this Bucks team on the other side. I think you mentioned it with they started with a 2-8 start. It felt like, oh boy, when you're below the Raptors in the standings, things aren't looking good. But what did we learn about this team? Maybe finding their stride after that start. Is there some internal leadership, some coaching adjustments that were had, or just, you know, teams get off to a bad start and they find their footing. Is this a real growth period for them that might be meaningful, whether it means winning the Emirates Cup or making a playoff push?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of that. And I think a lot of us who sort of, I mean, I was one of the people that thought, you know what, just trade Giannis, just blow it up.
Yep.
Way premature. I admit that now. You know, people wanted Doc fired, which would have been crazy for him to be paid by, you know, three different teams. I think it's a situation where you have veteran players. We expect a lot from them. And they had a chance to marinate, which is great. And then, I'm sorry, I'm like in Vegas and there's weird people walking around right now and I'm actually kind of scared. So I'm going to stay on the radio. And if I disappear, you guys know
chat
where
with
I am.
Us.
Dear Lord, where am I? I think it was a situation where they got back on track. I think we also made a lot. You know, they spent the entire offseason not hanging out with each other. And we made a big deal about that as well, because in most off seasons, we tend to sort of see these guys hang out. They go meet at somebody's hometown. They, you know, Giannis takes off for Greece. Damian did his thing. It was weird. And we thought maybe the chemistry was off. Maybe this is a team that doesn't actually like each other. You know, these are the things we read into because that's all we have to go off of. Clearly we were wrong. And, you know, I love Bobby Portis. I think when you have a team with that many vets, now you got Middleton slowly making his way back into things. They'll be fine. But again, the East, weirdly, is a top heavy league division conference as well. And so I don't know in the end. They may actually have enough, but Boston, until further notice, is just head and shoulders above. And I know it's a disrespectful thing to say to Cleveland, but Boston's got their stuff together. And they also, nobody's shooting threes like they are. It's a little bit insane.
Creatures crawling at all hours in Vegas. So, yeah, definitely watch out.
You guys, I'm laughing, but I had to, like, shake my finger. And he was
like, oh, boy.
There you go. You repelled.
They wanted to give their take on the Emirates Cup.
I mean, honestly, I would have asked if I thought he'd have. That's why my words just became a jumble. Like, I don't know. So I usually am more coherent.
You're a pro.
He's good. He's gone.
We're talking with Michelle Beadle of Run It Back, FanDuel TV, Mad Dog Sports Radio. We talk about legacy stakes all the time. I'm sure you do on your platforms as well. What's the legacy stake for Doc Rivers with the Milwaukee Bucks?
It is big. And look, none of them are ever going to admit that. Nobody talks about their own legacy. I think they're actually annoyed when we bring it up. But it's obviously part of the storytelling. I mean, championship rings are part of it. All-stars are part of it. All of the things, the accolades that we just give to these guys, especially us in this business, because when we introduce these folks, like, that's sort of their title now. We carry that with them forever. And I think Doc was getting a reputation. You know, it's been so long since that championship run, and he was the belle of the ball when the Celtics won that. And then people started questioning, and they thought, well, do players still get like him, and does he still have the ears of the locker room, and all of those things. And when this year started out the way it did, on top of that, you add the way he got the job, which always felt a little bit smarmy, I guess, you know, coming on as a consultant, and then they fire their coach, who was not horrific at that point. The record wasn't even all that bad. It felt a little bit, and I love Doc, and I'm saying all this knowing that I like the guy, but it didn't feel right. And then they didn't seem to start the year in a way that made you think, oh man, that was a great move bringing Doc in. And it really looked like they were on their way to firing another coach. And so, yeah, if they can make a run, you know, face Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know that they beat Boston, but we're also talking about a league where a superstar is injured seemingly every 2 to 3 days. So you never know what you're getting by the time May and June roll around. I think it's huge. I think people want to know. It's like the way we look at Aaron Rodgers in football. Like, Aaron Rodgers gets to still walk around and consider himself great. But if you think about it, it's been 15 years since he won a championship. And people seem to still talk about him like you're tenured into greatness for the rest of your career. I don't think that's true. I think sometimes your legacy is the last stop you had and the last acts that you took. And he's got a good chance here. I mean, you have a wonderful, great team that should be together for a while. So it's really no excuses, honestly, for Doc.
So tomorrow, OKC looking like around 4.5-point favorites. Do you have like an X factor maybe for each team? I know that there's the incredible, historically good defense for OKC, and you mentioned it, like maybe finding a little bit of footing here with the Bucks in terms of them getting some momentum and rising through that terrible start that they had. What would you pick as the way for maybe the Bucks to overcome OKC? Because I guess that's the storyline coming in. The favorite looking to maybe make this a legitimate run for themselves, a test at being champions with OKC. How does Milwaukee overcome that?
It's funny, that too, when I woke up and I saw the 4.5 points, I thought, oh, wow, that's actually quite interesting. I probably would have lost that bet on top of the bets. But, yeah, you know, what Giannis, I think, well, he takes no threes, right? So the rest of the league has just decided that every single person and their mother should attempt 19 threes per game. And I like the idea that he didn't do that. He's a big man, and he's built like a Greek god, like use that, right? And sometimes we get frustrated at some of these big guys that don't take advantage of help the size and just stay under the basket and make people feel silly. And so, you know, if they continue to do that and if they play tough, but I'll be honest, I think Oklahoma City wins this. I think the Bucks still have championship aspirations. Not that there's a let up. I know a lot of people thought, well, what's the point of the cup? And, you know, people are competitive. These are competitive dudes. $500,000 is awesome. Don't get me wrong. There are things most of us would do for just the one $500,000 pop. But it's the competition. And I think Milwaukee came in here hearing all of the noise. They've been hearing the noise for weeks. Dame Lillard does not let that stuff go necessarily. So I think they have a little something to prove. It's just a stepping stone to what they're really after. Whereas OKC, this is such great practice. You saw SGA the other night kind of shush the post-game festivities, which we all kind of come to know them for, sort of when one guy gets interviewed, the whole team's there. Mm-hmm. He shushed that. So clearly there's an air of, hey, everybody's watching. This game tomorrow is the only game in town. They are preparing for what will hopefully be, as a team, many years of success together. For me, this is such a almost like a practice run towards bigger and better, but under a hot spotlight. And I think SGA proved that the other night, that the spotlight doesn't get hot enough. I think he's going to be just fine. Keep that up, and I the 4.5 points is fine. Don't you think that seems like a lot, though? Feels like a lot.
Yeah, it might be. I would say it's probably pretty on. Like, I do think the Thunder deserve to be favorites. It could be a pretty close game, and it should be a close game. But again, we've seen the Thunder be able to close. We've seen the Thunder be able to pull away late. And if it does come down to free throws in the end, maybe it changes which side you're eventually on. This is the best game to be a part of, though. I mean, $500,000 for every member of the winning team, $200,000 for every member of the loser team. This is the only basketball game in the world, at least, I think,
everyone wins.
That has a guaranteed $200,000 for everyone who's participating or at least sitting on the bench. So I think that's a great thing. But I also think it's an interesting part of the handicap if you actually want to go and look at the spread or just the money line, whatever. Because clearly, OKC is a young team. They're not all rich and famous yet. They're not all on Shea's level. And then you got Giannis and Dame, who have made so much money in their careers, and a lot of guys who have also made a lot of money in their careers as well. Do you think that matters? Do you think it's a prestige thing? It's a spotlight thing? I think that's more powerful in the end. But winning an extra $300,000, I feel like it's even if it's just like a team thing, it's something that helps you bond. I feel like it could be something that's, you know, truly meaningful, especially for a team like the Thunder.
I agree. Look, and I'm not sitting here trying to put pressure on people, and I wonder if the guys at the top of the totem pole, do they divvy that up, or is it just nice found extra money? We've been talking to some of the former players, like J.R. Smith today. You know, what would you do if you won the $500,000? I'm always curious, right? Mm-hmm. And most of them were like, no, this is bonus money that wasn't in the budget, so I'm spending it. I'm just like, okay.
Untaxed in Vegas, too, probably.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right? Like, that's the best part. But I do. I think of the, you know, the guys at the bottom, the 10, 11, 12. Coaching staff gets bonuses. I would imagine everybody that's traveling with the team gets some sort of a bonus. So you're out here. It's a neutral territory. You guys get to celebrate no matter what, I would say. But celebrate if you win it all in Vegas with a little extra cash in your pocket. The fact that they're so young, though, like, they are such a young team that I am curious what some of these guys would spend it on. Because when you talk to young people and you say, what are you going to spend $500,000 on? It's not the same as what I'm going to spend $500,000 on. So I would love to know. I think it's all been so bonding. And I think for a team like OKC, it's probably – just a skosh more of a valuable hang, if you will, than maybe it is for Milwaukee. For Milwaukee, it feels more like this is a business trip. They're used to this. It's what they do. Whereas I think OKC, it's almost like a glorified fun summer camp with cash at the end of the rainbow, and it's just the best case scenario. I was with you. I heard you saying you were a little skeptical last year when this came out. I didn't even understand it at first. I was like, wait, what is this? It's extra games. It's not extra
weird
games.
Courts.
Now I'm all in. I'm buying it. It's fun.
I love it. Well, thanks for helping us tee it up. Enjoy Vegas. Don't be offering people $500,000 too loudly on the street.
No.
They might come after you.
Right?
Yeah. Keep that quiet.
No, I don't have it. It's not mine.
Good. We appreciate your time, Michelle. Enjoy tomorrow, and thanks again, guys, for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Michelle Beadle of Run It Back TV and Mad Dog Radio and many other she's on everything, Beadle and Decker, et cetera. So we appreciate her coming on to help tee it up.
It's the single most lucrative sporting event to be involved in. Like, imagine signing like a 10-day, like a week before this.
Oh, that's
you're already
pretty
in the semifinals and you're just guaranteed that bonus.
Yeah, I don't it's really, awesome. To be honest, like, does every single player that touches the court get it? Every single
no,
person
I think
that's
every
on the
member
roster?
Of the team is guaranteed at least $200,000 at the end of tomorrow night's
game. Let's take a triple look at that. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And an extra $300,000 if they win. Emirates does have a lot of money.
They have a lot of money. Okay, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to come back and chat with Gene Principe to tee up the Stanley Cup rematch that we have tonight, Panthers and Oilers. Our text line has been open and will stay open. We asked you who's more likely to reach the Stanley Cup final, the Panthers or the Oilers. Send us that at 590-590, standard message and data rates. You can also tweet us or whatever that's called now. Just send us a message.
Tweet's fine.
You can find us. And then we'll wrap up with some best bets and take a look around the NHL. We've also got maybe a discussion on the best athlete in the world going right now, Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah, we could get to that. I want to know how bullish you are about the Bills Super Bowl chances, given that you're the resident Bills expert and fan. So we'll do that next.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Blake Murphy.
And I'm Matt Bonner.
Join us weekday mornings at 11 as we break down all things Toronto Raptors.
It's the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Doubleheader of basketball for you on the network afterwards. We've got Philadelphia and Charlotte at 7 p.m. start, Denver and Sacramento at 10 p.m. start. That's on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. If you're looking for a regional hockey, we've got Colorado and Vancouver, Sportsnet Pacific at 10:30. So the big game is Oilers and Panthers.
Yeah, I would say so. A lot of big games, though. A couple in the NFL as well tonight. There's a lot of good sports available, but I do want to ask you, because there was a massive game yesterday, and you're a massive Bills fan, the Bills beat the Detroit Lions. Lions only had one loss on the register before yesterday, but it's not. I don't think it's as simple as, okay, you beat the best team, you're now the best team. The Bills have allowed 86 points over the space of the last two games. They won one, they lost one. Josh Allen basically won the MVP over this two-game stretch. But after beating the Lions and after showing what they've shown over the last couple weeks here, do you have real belief that this is the year that the Buffalo Bills are the best team in the NHL or NFL? They do have the shortest odds to win the Super Bowl. Do you think that's right?
I think that this is the most confident I felt about them. I don't know if I feel like I'm locking them in to win the Super Bowl. There's just still too much that's got to come between then and now, just like how I feel confident about the Maple Leafs. I don't lock them in to win the Stanley Cup yet.
The confidence level has to be higher with the Bills than the Leafs.
No? Yes, most definitely, yes. But because Josh Allen will take this team as far as he can, and he has done just unbelievably. Like, it's incredible to watch Josh Allen right now. It is a treat for anyone that likes sports to see that guy play over the last couple. Since he got engaged, he's just been cooking. So propose to your loved ones.
It's been really, and things it's can been change really good for you. Since he got
it's just
engaged.
Amazing to watch. Really is. So I think last night or yesterday afternoon, you know, we were also watching the Leafs. We were at the Leafs game working as well. But if that was the Super Bowl, if we had a Lions-Bills Super Bowl, I don't think anyone could be upset.
Yeah, and we're betting over 90.5 points and potentially making money on it. I think the thing about Allen is there's such a stark contrast to at least the player that was supposed to be better than Allen, and that's Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's
that gives you some confidence.
I know we got
sure.
hurt in the game, but it's a real struggle for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. And maybe
they're still
Lamar,
the boogeyman.
Maybe you get Lamar versus Josh Allen, and it's like this amazing AFC title game, and maybe it meets and exceeds every expectation. But there's only one guy playing at Josh Allen's level, and it's Josh Allen. Like, it is absolutely incredible what he's turned into. And if they can get some stops on defense, it's going to be really hard to get in the way of the Buffalo
Bills. Yeah, they are rolling and making good play calling decisions. That matters too. You lost your Dan Campbell future maybe yesterday.
Yeah, it was a tough day yesterday. I'm licking my wounds a little bit.
All right. We'll give you a new best bet after this. Justin has a new best coach of the year candidate after lost his Dan Campbell bet. But let's bring in Gene Principe of Sportsnet. Of course, Gene, our guy, helping us tee up the Stanley Cup rematch tonight. Gene, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm enjoying your chatter about Josh Allen.
You like him?
Yeah, I mean, I watched a good chunk of that game yesterday against the Lions, and he's something amazing. And I guess he's one of those players that even if you're not a football fan, you can't help but be amazed at what he's been able to accomplish. And I feel for the Pegula family, because I'm thinking, you know, on one hand, you've got the Bills charging their way to maybe a Super Bowl and a victory, and then you've got the Sabres that are winless in 10, and I covered the National Bank Open presented by Rogers, and Jessica Pegula won that tournament. So I got a chance to meet her, and kind of a closeness to the Pegula family and what a great family they are for sports in general. So I hope that the Bills keep doing what they're doing, that the Sabres can do a little bit of what their football, the football team is doing as well. So great to watch football, hockey, so much going on this time of the year, basketball.
Is it McDavid-esque what Josh Allen is doing
at
the moment?
I have to tell you, Justin, that's what I was thinking yesterday watching Josh Allen. One of the things that you hear from people regarding McDavid, and listen, we got to put Leon, I feel bad always leading with McDavid when Leon Draisaitl was the player of the week and, you know, helped carry the Oilers to success this past week. But I always feel like if you were not a football fan or not a hockey fan and you watch McDavid, you'd go, that guy looks a little bit different than everybody else, the way he plays. And I feel like Josh is, you know, Patrick Mahomes is an amazing quarterback, lots of great talents in the league. But right now there is nobody better than Josh Allen. And as someone who works in the northernmost NHL city, it's nice to see some of the, I wouldn't call Edmonton a small market, and Buffalo fills their stadium, but maybe smaller cities have success against some of the bigger cities.
Totally agree. I'm a Bills fan, so we'll welcome you on
board.
And
great fan base.
Anytime you need Gene. I can see you jumping through a table. Like, for the content, I could see Gene jumping through a table.
I can see that, too.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I would love that. That would be a great opening.
I agree. So, you know what? You can
have to think about that.
You can weave in a parallel, and we'll get Gene to go through a table. And I won't sign any. I'm sure there's a Sportsnet HR person that's, like, already getting nervous about an injury, but you're tough.
Consider the waiver signed.
Yeah, it's signed virtually through the show. Okay, so let's talk about tonight. It's the first rematch of the Stanley Cup final, obviously Edmonton and the Panthers. I feel like this is worth a lot more than just 2 points if you're an Oiler, but they're playing it cool in all the media, like, it's just another game. So what's really going on, Gene?
Yeah, I think it'll be cool until they go up for warm-up. And they see those jerseys, the Panthers jerseys, and I'm sure it'll bring them back to where they were, how they won game six and pushed the series to seven, having won three in a row. I totally agree with you. The Oilers have been playing it. I think it's like anything in life. If something great happens to you, you'll talk about it from sunrise to sunset. Something bad happens to you, you don't really want to talk about it. And it's weird, because you'd like to ask the Oilers, you know, what's kind of your lasting memory, or what was the great memory of the playoffs? And I'm sure there is one in there. A few of them have kind of said game six of the Western Conference Final when they defeated Dallas at home. It was a fantastic night. But in the end, it always, no matter how you circle around it, you end up landing on game seven and losing in the Stanley Cup Final. So this morning, you know, Matthew Tkachuk from the winning squad, all the great memories. He talked about being back in the building and all the things that come with being a cup champ. But he did say when the Panthers lost to the Vegas Golden Knights the previous year, he said there was so much anger and sort of built up, pent up frustration in that first game against Vegas after losing in the cup final. So I have to think there'll be some of that for Edmonton. But for sure, you know, they're not weeping. They're not in a, I wouldn't say a depressed state, but a down state like they were after game seven. We saw all the stuff that was posted and brought up by Amazon and Prime of Connor and Tkachuk this morning talked about his role, how if Oiler fans think he's a villain. And he said, well, they might, but I know they really like me in Florida. So some great storylines going into a rematch. I'd like to see the two teams do it again, or maybe, you know, Toronto, Matthews and McDavid, but still a long way to go before anybody can worry about who their Stanley Cup final matchup will be with.
Certainly a long way to go, but when you think about the Stanley Cup final, I think the Oilers and the Florida Panthers are two of the teams that definitely come to mind. And we talk about learnings all the time, right? Like every team has to learn on the playoff stage before they can truly identify themselves or be the best version of themselves. Not to say anything is promised here, but how do you think last year shaped the Oilers? You know, you discuss like how the feeling is and what you're able to glean out of them, but in what way are the Oilers different this year as they go about their business, not necessarily with what they want to share, but what they share just through body language and actions alone?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's a great point, because when the season started, you know, they just didn't have everything that they had in game seven. You're at, you know, virtually the highest level you'll ever get at, minus maybe another goal or two, to suddenly being in a regular season game. And I'm not sure the motivation could be there. I don't think you can manufacture that so quickly after the most devastating loss of your life. So now, though, I think that the Oilers have kind of figured out, okay, we're this kind of team. There were changes that they had to deal with. And I think the biggest thing you learn is what it takes to win. And I'm not sure you understand that until you start to make the steps that you make. And I know it's an old story, 1984 and, you know, or 83, 84, watching the Islanders, the bumps, the bruises, the ice bags that it took to win a Stanley Cup. I don't think anybody, it's not like they don't understand, but there are certain things in life, I would say, that you just have to live. No matter how often you hear about it, no matter how often you think you know what it's like, you live it. And I know that they lived it. And I think that pain and suffering is a motivator for them. And I think it will continue to motivate them as they push their way through. Right now, they're playing their best hockey this season. They won five in a row, eight of their last nine. And they're looking like a team that has a shot again of going to the Stanley Cup. And I think when you have Connor McDavid, and this is, you know, Matthew Tkachuk's a great player, and Sam Reinhart's a great player, and Slava Barkov's a great, I mean, there's so many great players, but I think when you have McDavid, and maybe a little bit to a lesser extent, Leon Draisaitl, there's just this expectation that playoffs are the minimum, and then I think you get to, once there was like conference final, okay, if you get to a conference final, that's successful. And now it seems like the only way they can have a successful season is to win a Stanley Cup. No pressure, boys. But yeah. I think that they're ready to handle that. And that's what they want to be. They want to be Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, you mentioned their winning streak here. And since U.S. Thanksgiving been on a bit of a tear, I don't know if there's a parallel here, but I'm going to try to draw it. A bunch of guys getting cut from the Team Canada roster, maybe ones that we thought were locks. Not a snub necessarily based on their play, but I think that, you know, Hyman, Bouchard, Skinner really thought that they would have that opportunity coming into the season, and they're not on it. What was the dialogue like around the team when those discussions were happening and ultimately the roster came out? And the response has been pretty good, team-wise, individually-wise, still to be, like, continue to be proven. But I'm sure, personally, that would motivate me to be like, I'm going to show you that you missed out.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more, for sure. And whether that's something that you carry for a season, whether it's something you carry for, you know, a month, in this case, it's been a couple of weeks. But for sure, I mean, Stuart Skinner's save percentage has been, you know, in the 940s, 950s, basically for the last, he's only lost one game in the last six or seven, and that was a 1-0 shutout loss. Zach Hyman has five goals in five games since coming back from injury. Evan Bouchard, who looked like he might be out for one game on the weekend but came back, has been playing his best of the season. So I agree with you. I don't think it's a coincidence. It's a little bit, you know, I think around here, I would say being Edmonton oil country, people who watch the Oilers, the feeling was that more than just Connor McDavid would make the team, That's point one. Point two would be that if they had won one more game in that Stanley Cup final, that those three guys, Bouchard, Hyman, and Skinner, I'm not saying they would have been locks for sure, but they would have almost had to lose a spot than to win a spot. And ironically, all of them kind of had some struggles for a few weeks, and it seems like that was the determining stretch. I don't know that. Maybe if Zach Hyman had four more goals, he still wouldn't have made it. And if Evan Bouchard had, you know, nine more points, he still wouldn't have made it. And if Stuart Skinner's save percentage was X amount higher, he still wouldn't have made it. I'm not sure what the inner workings were, but I think there was a belief that certainly going into training camp and into October, those three had a good shot. In the end, none of them made it other than Connor on Canada. So I'm sure Connor would be a little bit lonely till he gets there and is alongside Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon and all the other great stars. And one thing I'll say, when you're coach and GM of Canada, you're not in it to play in it. You're in it to win it. So I couldn't imagine that any of these players they felt would help them and they didn't put them on the team. I think they're all good enough to be on the team, but the way they built it was in a way they think will lead them to win the first ever Four Nations faceoff.
We're chatting with Sportsnet's Gene Principe. We've been outlining all these different challenges here for the Oilers this season, which means, that they've had to have someone help them overcome them to get to the point where, the ship is steadied and they look like a team that can go to the Stanley Cup final again. And Chris Knobloch, of course, is the leader, I guess, of the leaders with the Edmonton Oilers. Maybe a lot of credit goes to the guys who are in the room, but I wonder, because he's still a bit of an unknown quantity around the entire NHL, how Chris Knobloch has made sure that, you know, he didn't suffer a similar fate, not necessarily in that, you know, it would be like it was with Woodcroft, but how has Knobloch made sure that despite the challenges, despite the impossibility of just being great immediately, that the Oilers have got themselves back into a good position?
Yeah, I think in some ways, I think the challenge early in the season was a bigger challenge than the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's saying that they had, four elimination games in the Cup final and two elimination games against Vancouver. But you're playing a certain team for a certain stretch, and it's all about that one club. When the season begins and there's so many great expectations and things are not going your way, I will say Chris has, and Edmonton's had some wonderful coaches here, really, really good coaches. And Chris has this certain touch, especially last year. I mean, he would flip guys or move someone to a wing and they'd score. And you're like he just had this really golden touch on the part of Edmonton all the way, I guess, Panthers fans would say right until game seven. But he's come back and I think he's been able to, it's kind of like last year it wasn't his team, even though he coached them from, after the 13th game. But this year it's his team. It's his camp. It's everything is kind of his and his coaching staff. So it's kind of a different pressure than it was last year when you step in and the team is mired in this horrendous slump and you're thinking, can they get out of it? Now you get out of it, you go to game seven of the Stanley Cup, and just to reiterate, what's left? One more win. That's a lot of pressure on everybody, including the coach. But I think he just has a great handle on what's needed. I think he's one of the best coaches that I've seen at poking, prodding, motivating without being critical or cynical or having to make these huge headlines to try and point something out. He is able to deliver a message to the public through the media and through his words that you understand what he's saying, but he's not hitting you over the head with it. And I think that resonates with players. I don't think a team like Edmonton needs that or wants that. One of the great things about him, and John Cooper, who just, is going to be coaching Canada in the Four Nations Faceoff and has passed 900 games with the Lightning and multiple Stanley Cup winners. He said one of the great things that helped him become the coach that he is that he started to sort of, I don't know if it's trust his assistants, but let them do their jobs. They're part of the staff. Let them do their jobs. And I think Chris is really good at that. He does have the final say in things, but he listens. He appreciates what they know, how they've been around the team longer, particularly last year, but I think it's carried over into this year. And he's one of the nicest guys you'll meet. I mean, Imperial, Saskatchewan, it's a hamlet. I don't even know if it's a town. And, farm boy work ethic. He's worked his way up. wanted to be an NHL player. He realized that wasn't going to happen. And it was, I wouldn't say it was a leap of faith, but when you get rid of a coach and you're hiring a new coach to coach Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Zach Hyman, and all of those players, you have to get it right. And the Oilers went straight for their guy. So credit to, you know, Jeff Jackson and Ken Holland at the time. Jeff had a great relationship, working relationship with Chris, with Erie, and then that continued when he was in Hartford. And I guess thanks to the New York Rangers for allowing Edmonton to talk to him and hire him. But it has been a wonderful move. And I will say this, only once publicly at a practice have I heard him yell. It was in Washington, and it was the start of what turned out to be these long 16 and 8 game winning streaks. Mm. That's the only time. And he wasn't like crazy yelling, but he was just kind of like, hey, they were doing a drill. And they went offside. They didn't need to go offside. And he kind of stopped the play and he kind of yelled at him, going, you don't need to, why are you going offside? Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure one moment can carry this long, but it felt like to me that the players understood that he's willing to raise his voice if necessary. But everything I hear and the little bit I see, you know, behind the scenes, Prime and Amazon and Oil Drop that they do here with the Edmonton Oilers, I never see him, you know, breaking sticks and smashing walls or anything. He just seems to take his business seriously and wants to make that the way he approaches his players.
Yeah, I just quickly looked up Imperial, Saskatchewan. A population of 360 people back in 2016. Two notable people on Wikipedia, Connor Ingram and Chris Knobloch. That's it.
The whole mob.
That's it. The whole team, the whole town is.
Ayla's going to be on a Hamlet rabbit hole.
I'm going to look through every
the rest of the night
nearby area and try to get to the bottom of it. But, Gene, we appreciate you coming on. Yeah. Hey, I just also looked something else up for you. Sabres in town to face the Oilers, Hockey Night in Canada, January 25th. We'll get you a table ready to go, all right?
Wouldn't want to be a folding table.
By the way, I don't know much about Hamlet or Macbeth, but I do know about McDavid.
There you go. Perfect stuff. Thanks, Gene. We'll chat soon. We appreciate your time.
Take care.
Thanks so much. That's Gene Principe of Sportsnet. He will jump through a table in probably a month and a bit.
I hope.
January 25th.
We may have to remind
Sportsnet folks.
It'll be a very proud moment on the show.
You know that would go viral. Like, I'll send him my table jump from 2 years ago, and he can use the form.
It's perfect.
Practice.
Perfect scheduling too. Like January 25th, we're talking. I think that's actually conference championship weekend,
and it is Hockey Night in Canada. Sabres Oilers 4 p.m. puck drop. There you go, Gene.
It's gonna happen.
We're here to help you.
You're all welcome.
All right. You know, we've been reading. I've been telling you about our 50-50 fortune. This is the last week, so everybody, listen up. The Sportsnet 50-50, Sportsnet the 590 the fans, 50-50 fortune supporting food for kids is now in the home stretch. So make sure you've entered for your chance to win while making a huge difference. Our 50-50 lottery has the more money that we raise, the more kids we can feed in the GTA, and the more that you can win. And the current take-home prize is just under $800,000, $792,000 with a little bit of change there. Someone's going to win that jackpot this Thursday morning. So let's get that number as high as possible. For more details and to buy your tickets, go to foodforkids5050.ca or text the code word cash to 59590. We'll send the link right to your phone. The 50-50 fortune supporting food for kids. Standard message and data rates apply. Ontario only. This is it. The last couple days. So let's get that to a million, okay?
Yeah, quickly rivaling a 50-50 in oil country.
Yeah, oil country. If they're listening, Imperial, Saskatchewan.
It is Ontario only.
That's true.
Relatives, though?
Sorry. Don't get interested, Saskatchewan. You have friends that are here. Okay, quickly, best bets for tonight. I'm back to Motivation Station. It's a Monday. Oilers and McDavid, we just talked about it. This game means a lot more to the Oilers and maybe to Connor McDavid, who won the Conn Smythe Trophy, even though he didn't win the actual prize he wanted. So I've got them parlayed up. Oilers to win, McDavid to score, plus 245. And I also like another one, Battle of the Norris tonight, Makar and Hughes. We have that one on Sportsnet Pacific at 10:30 p.m. If you want to have both of them, get on the scoreboard with a goal. It's 23-1. They're both battling it out for the Norris. Let's do it.
I don't mind that. Dueling Norris Trophy candidates to score 23-1. That's great. We're going to go head-to-head. I like the Panthers tonight. I mentioned 7-0 against teams that they've played in the Stanley Cup playoffs the last 2 years. Panthers have been shut out in consecutive games. I think they might have a good night. I think their attention will be on the Oilers and getting back on track. And you mentioned it. Dan Campbell tickets, not dead. You said it was over. Like, he's still the second favorite in the market.
Whatever.
But if we're being honest, it took a big hit. Dan Campbell winning Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I watched after your that. Eyes start to water up a bit.
Yeah, there were some tough. Tears at least held back. That onside kick was just a terrible decision, and he probably should not win based on that alone. But there's still time in this market. Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, he's a great pick. I mean, this guy, they're supposed to win 6 games. They might win 14. He's got the Bears, Seahawks without Geno Smith, Packers, and Lions to close out the season. They could be the one seed. Doesn't have to be. Kevin O'Connell's probably going to win Coach of the Year now.
All right. Futures Cuth laying down a couple looks for you. That's it for us tonight. That was a fun one. Michelle Beadle and Gene Principe. Odds that Gene goes through a table -150. Setting that now.
I'll pay that price.
All right. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.